little getting over Purim, even though I didn't get drunk this year.
L'chaim.
But anyway, but we still, because we encountered a whole list of questions of different variety of things. So we're looking at some halacha about certain things that have come up along the way. And next week, Mitz Hashem, we'll get back to the Gemara, where around Daf Nun Beis. But we were looking at the Aruch HaShulchan, Evin or Ezer Simen Membeis, 42.
I can see the screen too.
Oh, you can see.
We have a copy.
There should be plenty of copies. The folks online see it here. Oh, Nigel Wilmot, do I know you? Your name is very familiar to me. How would I know you? Anyway, welcome. Welcome from London. London.
I guess that.
London. Nigel, you don't meet too many. Well, you have Cecil usually online also. But
that's
South Africa. Nigel? Nigel from Borough Park? I
don't know. Yeah.
Anyway. So there's a topic that we had touched on a number of months ago about davar shebe'erva. Last week we discussed this idea. The Gemara says that ein davar shebe'erva pachot mishnayim. Erva means licentiousness, you know, improper sexual varieties, but it also means in a less delicate sense. It means matters of personal marital status that are related to marital relations, right? So technically speaking, marriage also is erva. In other words, erva doesn't always mean illicit sexual manners. But marriage, which takes two people who are forbidden to each other in a romantic fashion, now allows them to participate in that marital act.
It's like a good text for a brother.
Right. In other words, it's not so poetic, but yes. And it's Nigel from New Zealand. Okay, we'll have to figure this out. He's in London, but he's from New Zealand, and he used to be in Web Yeshiva classes. And that's how it's a strange thing with Web Yeshiva. One gets the sense that you know people in the real world sense, even online. And divorce, of course, is a davar sheba erva for the opposite reason. And we always say that ein davar sheba erva pachot mishnayim. You need two witnesses to establish any of these things. Last week we talked about the Eidei Kiddushin. You need two witnesses in order to create the marriage, and you need two witnesses on the other end, Rachmanos, at a case of divorce when the marriage is coming apart, and now they are permitted to be and form relationships with other people. So
last week about how would conversion need a same status? It's also like an act that's
yes, well, not because of erva, but yes, conversion requires.
Is the witness create the conversion the same way?
In other words, for the act of mikvah, we require witnesses, which is tricky with female converts. Which is why they stand outside and they hear the splashing around, and the balanit, the woman in the mikveh, says, yes, she went in, and we combine these things together as if it was witnessed, which of course it wasn't because of the propriety of the thing. But whether or not that's l'kiyum hadavar, the way that marriage is or not, I'm not sure. So anyway.
I came up with a different share that I attended this week, last week.
Huh?
If somebody says, Ariyatul Kadesh, and there are no witnesses, has he said anything?
Well, this is what we were talking about last week. This came up in a shiur you attended here last week.
Another shiur also.
Uh-huh. Somebody's copying for me?
Somebody did the copying.
But that's exactly what we were talking about last week, and whether there's even a safek kiddushin, right? Without the... So the Aruch HaShulchan brings up this topic here in Sif Yud Tet, which is a little I mean, it's not polite to talk about it in polite company, but halachahi v'lelamda nachlutzuchim of a case of marital infidelity. You know, the halacha states and how and when and exactly the mechanics in which it's applied are not our case now. But if a woman is mezana, if a woman has an extramarital affair, so she's forbidden to be with her husband, and her husband is obligated to divorce her. Now, whether or not this is actually carried out in every specific case is not our issue here. But how do you know? In other words, since a davar she'be'erva, and this is certainly a davar she'be'erva, a woman having an extramarital affair, since a davar she'be'erva requires two witnesses, so usually you don't have two witnesses. I mean, you've seen television shows, like you know how these things, work. So shouldn't it be the absence of two actual witnesses? Now, the witnesses would have to be kosher witnesses, the same way we require for everything else. How common could that be that the case of marital infidelity has two kosher witnesses that aren't krovim zelazeh, that aren't krovim to either of the people, that are not gamblers or pigeon racers or who knows what? So shouldn't we say that even if we have knowledge that there was a case of znud, that we would say, but it doesn't matter because without davar she'be'erva, it doesn't exist. He says, hariyat mikudeshet li, right? You have a wedding with all the trimmings minus one aid. You have one aid, but you don't have another aid. So what do you have? You have nothing. But the tavachomer, if you don't even have one aid, right? You have nothing. So here, do we say that you have nothing? Would this be a mechanism by which we say that it's halachically inconsequential? Obviously, emotionally and whatnot. But would
way to situation header or whatever.
So what if it's a case of in flagrante delect? This you see on the TV shows. You know, in other words, the husband walks in and catches the wife in the act, red-handed. So first, there's no edus here because he's a karov and he's right. But he saw with his own eyes.
He has to know whether he remained married or not. So it's not a question of, not a court issue. It's just he has to know whether he's allowed to remain married. Or I assume what? That's
the... So the Aruch HaShulchan raises here in the Aruch HaShulchan Sif Yudtet. The Yesh B'zeh Sheila Ve'eich Chamrinan Ein Davachot Mishnayim. On where he had left off. Ve'im Kidesh Isha Blo Eidim Ein Kedushin Tofsin. If he marries her without proper edim, there's no kiddushin. They're not married. Afilu im emet shekidsha, and even if they really did mekadesh her, does it? Guy shows up and says, "This lady's my wife." Prove it, right? Prove it, right? In other words, since we're talking about television, right? This is probably the plot of no end of soap operas, right? Man and wife are standing under the chuppah or at the altar, as it probably would be on the soap opera. And they say, if anyone here objects and runs in from the back door, says, she can't marry him. She's already married to me. Right? Prove it. So the wife doesn't say anything. The woman doesn't say anything. So the rabbi or the justice of the peace, whatever, says, what's the proof that you're married? So today, forget that we have like marriage licenses, we have tudot zehut, we have other, right? What's the proof? Where are the edim? So he says, there were no edim. I married her, I gave her a ring, I said, hayat mekudeshetli, we stood under a chuppah, right? But there were no edim. So what do we say?
You're not married,
right? Even though he really did want to marry her, and maybe she really did want to marry him, but it doesn't count. Right? It's not that they're not believed to say that he gave a ring and said, hariyat mekudeshetli. Right? It's not a matter of ne'emanut, of his of their truthfulness. It's just what?
There was no valid
act. There was no valid act. There's actually an interesting, I'm on one of these rabbinic WhatsApp group thing for American rabbis. So, you know, each state has different laws over who can officially pronounce you man and wife. So, I mean, this is irrelevant for us halachically, right? It's irrelevant for us halachically. Do you have to be a rabbi to be Masada Kedushin? No. You should be. The state of Israel, you have to be. Not according to halacha, but according to the law of the state of Israel. Right? But you have to know the halacha. You have to know what to do. But you don't need to be a musmach in order to be Masada Kedushin. I'll be halacha. But in America, it depends on who anybody in many states. I think in New Jersey, as long as you are a member of the clergy, you're duly licensed to perform a wedding and sign the marriage certificate. And the marriage certificate being signed mean the couple are now legally wed in the eyes of the state of New Jersey. And because of the federal system of government in the United States, if you're legally wed in the state of New Jersey, you're legally wed in all 50 states and the District of Columbia.
Right. Elvis can marry you in Las Vegas. You know.
Right. Because in Las Vegas, they allow anybody who's dressed up like Elvis is authorized to do. So you go to Las Vegas and you have one of these 10-minute chapel ceremonies with the Elvis guy. You're married every place. But Elvis is not allowed to marry you in the state of New York, even though the state of New York will reciprocate and recognize Nevada's. In the state of New York, you need to be licensed. In order to be licensed, you have to go, if you're a rabbi, if you're a rabbi and you're performing a wedding in the state of New York, you have to take your Tudat Smicha or your letter from Yeshiva University or from Yeshivat Chaim Berlin or whatever it is. You have to go to City Hall and you have to receive a certificate that says that you are authorized, that you are vested by the power vested in me by the state of New York, that it's, and if you don't do that, even if you're a rabbi, even if you're the Gadol Hador and you haven't gone to the city hall and spent $10 to get this certificate, then when you sign the marriage license, the marriage license is invalid.
That's happened to me. We were living in Boston. We were going to get married in Chicago. We had a rabbi coming in from Israel who was going to be to the Paris, but we weren't going to be in Chicago enough time to get the license done, and he could. So we didn't know what to do. We couldn't, if we got married with him without having taken care of the legal requirements in Chicago before the wedding, it wasn't going to be a legal wedding. So I said, well, we're trying to find what to do. So we're living in Newton. We said, maybe we'll go get married by the justice of the peace. I said, ask my rabbi. I said, before we get married, then we're legally married. Then whatever you want, you can do with the rabbi after. Once you're legally married, it doesn't matter anymore. He said, yeah, as long as you don't consider halachically valid, you're just going through a legal thing. That's fine. So we go to City Hall in Newton, a very wealthy place. Probably nobody ever gets married in City Hall in Newton, Massachusetts, because it's a wealthy town. We were not wealthy, but we were, you know, officially came from an Akiva. And we go to this guy, and he's really excited because he never gets to marry anybody. And we're there in our street clothes. We don't have anyone with us. He says, do you have any vows? We say, no.
They're like, looking at this religious girl, is she like, yeah. You know, is she?
He says, do you have a ring? You want to give the ring? He said, no, thanks. He said, okay, he reads this, whatever. He has to read it. You can kiss the bride. He said, maybe later. And we walked out. He's probably like, this is one chance. And it was like the most.
So which anniversary do you celebrate?
Well, we celebrate our Hebrew anniversary for Chicago. But I know that as someone who's very involved in genealogy, I have a feeling that, you know, in three or four your generations, my, you know, great.
Someone's going to find your specific.
The Chicago, you know, we have their wedding album. Why can't we find the Chicago?
Anyway, so there's this debate going on. And somebody with a law degree was like weighing in on this RCA rabbis list. Is it l'chatchil or b'dieved? Meaning the rabbi who doesn't have the license in the state of New York is not supposed to perform this wedding. But if he does perform the wedding, b'dieved, does the state recognize it as a... Okay. So mashallah ma'adavadome here, you don't have edim. It doesn't count. And then Mishmur says, imkain, in the case where shizinta, ein b'ze edim. Rak habal ra'a shizinta. So what about a case where she had an affair and there were no witnesses and only the husband saw it with his own eyes? No, Eid Echad Ne'eman Bisurin is Lekula. Right?
I mean, it doesn't work both ways. I mean, you always talk about examples. The woman comes and says that she's married, and you don't have to. If a woman says comes to town, she says she's married, you believe her. So how is this different if, you know?
It would be that the husband has saw this. He himself has to do it.
Oh.
So the Aruch HaShulchan suggests
as a havamina, maybe this would be a source of akula that he doesn't have to divorce her. After all, lots of people weather, you know, terrible traumas in their marriage and make it work, right? Bahare pshita din esra alav. But then he rejects that and says, no, it's obvious that she's forbidden to him if he saw it with his own eyes. But tshuva zeh dekedushin maaseh kedushin osarta v'hatorah gazra she'en kedushin below edim. Ma she'en oken b'znut haznut osarta. What makes her forbidden to another man after the marriage? The maaseh kedushin. But what is definitional to a maaseh kedushin?
Edim.
It's built in. If you don't have Edim, you don't have Kiddushin. And it's the Kiddushin, which is definitionally required to take place in front of Edim, that makes her forbidden to any other man. That's that romantic bracha that we say, Va'asar lanu et ha'rusot, v'etir lanu et ha'nusot lanu al yedei chupa v'kiddushin. Right? But that's not the case with a matter of extramarital affair. It's not the witnesses that create the isser of the husband to now be with this wayward wife. It's the actual act of infidelity. And if he sees that with his own eyes, this is also from every TV show. This is always he's caught red-handed, right? He says, I can explain. Right? It's who are you going to believe? Who are you going to believe? Your lying eyes or me? So that's what the Aruch HaShulchan rejects the potential kula here to say that without Edim, we wouldn't require him to be divorced because...
That's only if he sees her. But somebody else sees her.
Oh. Somebody else sees her.
You have to trust them. So
there you don't. There you don't. Right? And she is not believed to. And if she comes and says, I had an affair, he need not believe her either. Right? Because we say, Einam Nazimata Russia. Right? If a person testifies that they did something wrong, you're not obligated to believe them. Right? In other words, these are all these types of mitigating mechanisms by which we can get around this problematic situation.
What does it actually mean to witness the money?
I don't need to, Ben. I saw you on the floor with your grandchildren. You know about the birds and the bees.
Oh, but no, but I'm serious. Because technically, it's just enough to see the two people together. And like, with the
don't need to see the sword and the sheath. Is that what the Gemara says?
I believe so. In other words,
you don't need to see the sword in the sheath.
Right? Okay. We're in mixed company here. But in other words, presumably, it's not just, two people with the smoking afterwards. It's you have to, I mean, who was it? Justice?
Not granted. The other,
White? You know when you see it? Potter Stewart, Justice Potter Stewart. In Sif Beis, the Aruch HaShulchan has another example of where personal knowledge comes into conflict with the letter of the law. What if the members of the marriage, the husband and or the wife, say they had kiddushin and they were witnesses? But we can't produce the witnesses. A person says about themselves, I was married and there were witnesses. I don't know who the witnesses are.
Oh, it could be gone. Maybe it could be another
there.
One of my witnesses is not alive.
Yeah. So that person has to act as if they're married.
They have to fight with each other.
Right? Right? Does that person saying about himself that I had a legitimate Maaseh Kedushin, whether or not it can be proved in a betin, has to act as if they are married to this person with all of the responsibilities thereunto pertaining.
Here's where we say it, if something I'm assuming.
No, it's a statement of personal knowledge, right? So in other words, if you say, I'm married to her, I had Edim, I had a real Maaseh Kedushin, so then that means he can't then go and like stand under a chuppah with her sister.
We believe him,
right. And if the woman wants to get married to somebody else, she needs a get to get out. Now to you, finally. What are we going to talk about now?
Two exclusive witnesses.
Two exclusive witnesses. How long are you married?
14 years. A bunch of years. A little less than 50.
Okay. Keep at it.
Thank you very much.
Where did you get married? In Yerushalayim. At your wedding, almost 50 years ago in Yerushalayim, when they were Edim, did you say, or did the Masada Kedushin say, that these are the Edim to the exclusion of all others?
I don't remember.
Who was the Masada Kedushin?
No, they do that nowadays.
Yeah, now it's quite popular.
You remember if they were Edim?
Huh?
Remember if they were Edim?
There were Edim. I remember that. One of them's gone. Rav Shapiro from Better Hearing.
Okay.
I'm sure he did.
Nowadays, it's quite common that, we spoke about this a few months ago, that the Edim are appointed, and we say that they are the Edim to the exclusion of all others.
He also says, do you have Harata if you're...
Did you do Tshuva?
Which is horrible. I think.
Yeah. Sometimes we ask the Edim, quick, do a little Tshuva. Because maybe you have like a virus in your back pocket, and a balavera is posel le'edus, at least dirabonan, and in some cases maybe diraisa. So if you do tshuva, you make a quick tshuva, va'bal chet. So then you'll be clean, and hopefully you can hold on to it, you know, for the 3 seconds it'll take you to get to the Maaseh Kedushin. But they do this as well. But this is going to come up again now if we get to it tonight. So this idea of appointing them, designating them as the exclusive witnesses. So the Aruch HaShulchan explains this. Now the Aruch HaShulchan was older than you, and he was even older than Rabbi Lapin, who was your Masada Kedushin, and he was also connected to the Gru. So it's all in the family over here.
Yep.
If you go to the Alpshul's house, he has the family tree going back to the Gru. Not genetically,
Masora.
That his Rebbe was a Talmud of somebody else, and that Rebbe was a Talmud of someone else, and that was going back to the Gru, which is, I think, more interesting than the genetic family tree. Because on everybody's genetic family tree, you've got all types of people you'd be happy to get rid of. But to say that you have a Masora going back to...
Imagine in this room now we do. If you were a student of Rabbi, or a student of the Rav, then we're good to
yeah,
go.
Yeah, so. I guess. But how many generations is it between you and the Gon?
I think it's...
8. Rabbi Soloveitchik tells a story that when he was a little boy, he was in Vilna with his father for something, and they go to shul, and somebody points to this. So this is, the Rav was born in 1903. So this is the first decade of the 20th century. The Gru died in 1797. You know, like 110, maybe a little drop less than 110 years old. So there was a really old Jew in the shul. And somebody says to the Rav, says to his father, you see this old Jew? He saw someone who saw the Gon. Right? In other words, he was only one step away from the Vilna Gon. Right? In other words, there were no, in 1905 or whatever it was, 1907, there was nobody still alive that had seen the Gon. but there were people that had seen people that had seen the goon.
No, how many people today had seen, knew somebody, how many people in this room knew somebody who lived in the late 1800s? We probably know people who were born in the...
No, that's something not, there's nobody in this room knows somebody who died in the 1800s.
No. No, somebody knows somebody.
Oh, yes. Okay.
I need to make that kind
of thing. Okay. Okay. Anyway, so anyway, the point is the Rav tells this story that as something very meaningful in his life, this idea, you know, for the Rav, this idea of the Masorah was a very significant idea, but it plays out not just in the teaching, but in the human connection as well. So the Aruch HaShulchan says that what happens at a wedding normally? Now, this description may not correspond to the way things are. Maybe it corresponds a little more to, I don't know, like old world. Like, you remember the wedding scene in Fiddler on the Roof? Oh, there's still some weddings like that. You know, like in B'nai Brak or something. You go and everybody's like kind of like huddled together outdoors in the rain. So the Aruch HaShulchan says, here, Lamed Aleph, Kidesh b'fnei edim afilo lo amar atem edai mikudeshet. De'ein ha'edim tzrichim liod mezumanim. You don't need to do this, he says. You have edim. You don't say that you are my specific edim. Right? It still works. As long as they saw it, they could be me'id. So if you're getting married, you go to a wedding. You know, it happens at weddings; they make mistakes, right? Somebody just told me they were at a wedding and what was it? This happens all the time. That somebody gets up there to say a Sheva Brachot and says the wrong bracha, right? This happens all the time. I mean, particularly like at the meal where you pass around, you just point in the bencher. But nowadays they have those cards, like where the guy gets up there, you hand him the card, and on the card is printed in big letters the bracha. But so it could happen. If it could happen at the Oscars, that they switch the envelopes, it could happen at the, right? And certainly if you're just pointing in a little sitter, right? And you get the wrong thing. So that's not ma'akev. If you say the brachot out of order, you just...
My brother-in-law got married, and then after the Masada Kedushin said, I felt something was wrong. You didn't know what it was. It felt like something was wrong. You just felt like something, and they went back and read, and looked, they had the wrong date on the kedushin.
The wrong date on the kedushin.
They had to redo that. I mean, the wedding was...
Right.
Whatever. They had to
redo it. That happens, that there are mistakes on it.
When they said the brachot in the wrong order, and the Masada Kedushin said, no, but, you know, and you look at the bunch of people, what the heck are they doing for the doctor? They said,
the Sheva Bracha? The Sheva Bracha? They said the Sheva Brachot out of order. I don't think that's correct.
I don't think Sheva Brachot is makev at all.
Right, but then there are other things. So there's somebody in our larger circle here who is a Masada Kedushin, and they said Birkat Erusin. And then he says, he was like the Masada Kedushin, but he was also like the MC. He says, and now so-and-so is Mechubad with the Kriyat HaKetubah. The person comes up and starts reading the Ketubah, and they hadn't done the Masada Kedushin. Right, as usually you do the Kedushin before the Ketubah. So while so-and-so is reading the Ketubah, somebody comes up to him and says, you didn't do the... So he saved it, he said... Now, according to the minhag in our family, right? Now we're going to do the Masada Kedushin after the reading of the ketubah. So there could be a mistake. So here you do everything, but you forget to designate edim. Right. However, what? There's always people standing around. Right. In other words, in America, where you have this whole mishigas with the bridesmaids and the best men and the things, whatever. So the best man is the friend. He's not the brother, right? So he's a kosher aide. That's what we do. In other words, the way things are done now is you say, Reuven and Shimon are the aidim. They come up. And the rabbi says, you're the aidim. Edim? And they say, yes. And you say to the Chatan, he says, you want them to be your Edim? And the Chatan says, yes. And the rabbi says, and you're kosher Edim? And they say, yeah. And they say, and you're not related to each other? And they say, we're not related to each other. And he says, you see, this is a ring? And they say, we see it's a ring. And he says, you see, it's Shaveh Pruta? And they say, it's Shaveh Pruta. And then he says, now do tshuva, because maybe you're Balei Avera. And they say, oh, yeah, I'll chet shechatanu. And then we do Hariat Mikudeshetli. But you don't have to do all of that.
I never heard of
kosher Edim. What? And maybe I was exaggerating on that line.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's what the Aruch HaShulchan here says. The Aruch HaShulchan here says you have the Kiddushin, right? Even if you don't designate specific Edim, but there happen to be there people that are witnessing it. So he says, you can say, yeah, I was there. I saw he gave her a ring. Right, most of the weddings we go to, even if you're not standing right under the chuppah, right, you were potentially could witness and say, I was there, I saw that there was a maaseh kedushin, right, and I'm a kosher aid. Right? So would we say lechatchila or b'di'evid, they're married or not?
B'di'evid.
Only b'di'evid. You know what only b'di'evid means? It means that they're married.
Yeah, it does, but in principle it's bad because, you know, the whole reason, everything is written in Sanhedrin everywhere else because somebody from the crowd are related for sure.
Oh, so, well, that's what we're gonna get to this, right? Lafiz afilu yichid edim, even if you do designate edim, yicholim achirim sheru ha-maaseh la'id. So even the normal way that we do it, where you have two people, you can say you're the edim, but there are other people there that could also be.
We said that nobody else.
Oh,
well, we said last. I mean, we asked last time. Wouldn't it be an advantage to have that? Because if for some reason you find a lady with a problem with Edim, at least you can have backups.
Nevertheless, it is proper to designate Ede Kedushin tachat achupa. V'chein nahugu b'kama kihilot kedushot v'nachon hu ma'od. And it's proper, and in many communities they do this, like at the Altshuler wedding, where you are miyached edim and say you two are the edim,
and nobody else.
Mikama ta'amim, and there are a few different reasons. He doesn't say to the exclusion of everyone else. But we're going to get to that.
Everything I've been to says that you're the edim,
right? Mikama ta'amim, achat mipnei sherov haomdim sham trudim b'mizmotei chatan vekala, ve'einam mebitim al ikar hakidushin. Most people aren't paying attention to the main thing, right?
Yeah, how he's dressed, see what he's wearing.
I mean, you know, weddings are...
Looking at your phone.
You're looking today, you look at this. Is Matei are like the decorations and the costumes and the weather, what their wedding and what's happening and the avizarim. Right, so most people aren't paying attention to the Ikar Kiddushin, which is... The Hariat Mikudeshetli. David's right. What are people doing it with? Weddings go on a long time, right? There's speeches, and until everybody sits down, you're looking at your phone, you're wondering, what are we going to get to eat? And how long is the first dance going to be? And, right? I should have had more at the smorgasbord. Right? My wife, we were invited to a wedding tonight, but I didn't want to miss this year. And it was a friend of hers, and it was separate seating, and I wasn't going to know anybody. And nobody knows that I'm not there. So she said, oh, the wedding's had called for 6:15 and the chuppah's called for 7. So at 5:15, she says, I better go. I said, Gesundheit, hey, but you're not going to miss anything. Right? When it says 6:15, it doesn't mean 6:15. And I can promise you that the chuppah is not going to be at 7 if the whole thing is only called for 6:15. At the earliest, the chuppah will be at 7:45, right?
Is it a Persian wedding?
No, it's good. Regular Ashkenazi wedding. In Yerushalayim, yeah. So,
that's winter, yeah.
And there's, and meaning, yeah, meaning the whole thing is after Shkia, so. Yeah, oh, meaning you're not rushing to get to Shkia, right. Vashenit, and the second reason. Sha'al piyarov omdim samuch lechatan vekala hem krovim upsulim leedut. Generally speaking, who's there? Who has the best seats?
The family,
all of not aunts and uncles, the mother, the father, the brother, the sister, maybe, right?
Right.
So the exactly the people. I mean, the people that have the best view. The people that have the best view are all posoledus, right? So it's good to designate people as edim, because if you're just relying on the crowd that mistama, there are two edim in there, they're further back. They're further back in the room. They're not going to have a clear line of sight. And the kosher edim are standing in the back. So unless you call those two guys up from yeshiva and say, come close, get a good look, you can't count on the fact that kosher edim actually saw. How much do you have to see? So it's not like your indelicate reference earlier of what you need to see. So you have to actually see the ring go on the finger. I mean, that's what we do.
Give it over.
You have to see that he gave, right? How far away do you think you could actually, assuming that your view isn't blocked, how far away do you think you can stand and watch a Masek Kiddushin? And
it depends on how good the person
is. No, like you see now at weddings, like the look, the Masadve Kedushin are, well, at my wedding, I had my Ede Kedushin. I asked two of my friends that I thought were really like the most kosher, like people that I really respect. I mean, they were peers. Like so, nowadays, it's fashionable. You ask the Rebbe. It used to, when we got married, right? So your Rebbe or your Rabbi was Masada Kedushin. But the Edim were your friends. They were your peers. Now I see you go to weddings, and a lot of times the Edim are Ramim from the yeshiva. Right? So I guess it depends on what weddings you go to. So you go, what wedding was I at? I was at a wedding not long ago. It was two Ramim from the Gush. Right? Because if you're a Ram in the Gush, so certainly you're kosher. You know the halacha. Right?
Nobody asked me.
And maybe they whispered it to them, or maybe they asked them in advance so as not to embarrass them. So, but this is already like a Purim spiel. Like this is a Purim spiel. Like the Masada Kedushin, the Masada Kedushin is a Ram in Haramor, and the Ede Kedushin are Ramim in the Gush. And what kind of tshuva would they need to do? So, for those that don't catch the references, these are the Hatfields and the McCoys of the yeshivot has them.
Rav Stav article in Lechon.
Rav Avram Stav.
Avram Stav, yeah.
I don't think so, no. Oh, wait, what I did. What was it about?
He talked about how he never believed that we find himself dancing together.
Oh, with the Hara. So, now the guys, like they get up close and personal. Right, they're like, you know, like they take off their glasses, they look at me close, they want to see the ring go on the finger, and right. But is that really necessary? It's not really necessary. So the second reason is the Aruch HaShulchan says it's good to have specific edim and not the figure mistama there kosher edim here, is because you want somebody who's actually going to see it with his own eyes and not be blocked. But and the Aruch HaShulchan didn't know that the photographer was going to be in the way, right? So certainly today when the photographers do it. What? See Hariat Mekudeshetli? I don't know that you have to hear Hariat Mekudeshetli. You have to see the giving of the ring from onto her finger. Right? No. Because in theory you could have a room full of people and there's no ma'aseh edut. Vashlishit. The third reason that it's good to have specific edim. Tilakama poskim kishekrovim im rechokim roim eze edut nifsalim gam harechokim kedin. Nimtsa echad karova pasul. So the Gemara in Makot has this idea. What do we call a set of edim? A kat. Like a kita is a group of students. A kat, or in colloquial early modern Hebrew, a kat is a sect, meaning like a section of people, right? The misnagdim called the chasidim, the anshei hakat, before they became known as the chasidim, right? They were known as the kat, the sect, the sectarian, because they broke away, right? So a kat is a set of edim, which is usually two. Can you have three edim at a kiddushin?
No.
Yeah, you can. I mean, it's not done. But if, let's say, you have this problem, you have to give out extra kibudim. So you can say these are three edim. These are three edim. You may have three edim sign a ketubah? You could. You could. It's not done. Don't do it. But it doesn't hassle the ketubah. Right? So if you don't designate specific edim, and you say, all of these people are the edim. So what are you doing? You're creating one cut. It's a very big cut. Maybe you have 300 people at the wedding. But what's the problem? When there's one bad apple, it ruins the whole bunch. If there's a psul in the cut, it ruins the whole cut. Right? We threw out the whole. What do you call that in law? The fruit of the poison tree. Right? When you exclude evidence. Right? If you have evidence, which is good evidence,
tainted.
But it's tainted because it was obtained in some unconstitutional way. Right? You got the guy to confess without reading him his rights. So we say it doesn't matter that it's objectively true. Right? It's thrown out. It's not admissible in court. So if you have a group of witnesses, 100 people, but one of them is possible, Gemara says the whole thing is thrown out. So without designating Edim to the exclusion of all others, or just saying that you guys are the Edim, which implies what?
You don't care about it.
That the other people aren't the Edim. So what do we know at any good wedding about all of the dearly beloved?
Their relatives.
There's somebody in there is possible, right? Either because he raises pigeons for a living or because he's your brother. Right? So. Oh, you have. Right. In other words, it's not possible that you'd have 100 people at any given wedding and all 100 of them are kosher edim, either because of some inherent psul or. What's the opposite of inherent?
Didn't have any family first.
I guess, but there's nobody there that's not related to each other. What? I mean, in theory, I guess it's possible. In theory, I guess it's possible you have a wedding, there's 100 people, and all 100 of them are kosher, edim, keshla atzmam, and to each other, and to the principals involved in the thing. In theory, it's possible. In reality, it doesn't happen. Right? So that's so the Aruch HaShulchan says, Shlishit lekama poskim, according to certain poskim, keshekrovim im rechokim roim eze edut nifsalim gam rechokim. When you have relatives and friends, rechokim are meaning non-relatives, not that they're standing far away. Right? So the presence of posel edim together in this kat, if you just say it's like undifferentiated edim, so the poskim that say that it's no good. That everybody falls.
In Maka, what's this in Maka? It's not talking about weddings.
No, it's talking about any cut of witnesses.
But that cut need to be defined by a person, or can just be like I don't know, 100 people see a murder and one person is a puzzle aid, so therefore the whole thing.
No, but in other words, they're not called as witnesses, but if they're called together as witnesses,
right? Same, but if the right? Magician doesn't say everyone in this crowd is a witness, then you're okay,
right? Or if in Kiddush HaChodesh, right? In Kiddush HaChodesh, they would bring them in two at a time. And if one of them is found to be posel for some reason, or his edus is kakamemi or cuckoo or something like that, so both of them get. Nimse echad karov o pasul ukeshim yachadim edim ena krovim poslin. But when you designate these the edim, so you can have a room full of everybody's posel, right? And it doesn't do anything because they're not part of this. That's what the designation does. It separates the edim from the rest of the. Of the pool. It doesn't let the bad apples affect the good bunch. U mehanachon. And it is proper. Shehatan yiched edim ela shemip, right? But so it's proper that the chatan be the one that designate the edim. Ela mipnei shemipnei abusha eifshar lahamis alav kazot. Filachay nachon sheharav. But I don't understand what the story says. But like the chatan might be embarrassed. The chatan might be embarrassed to designate the edim. I don't know why. Maybe
he's just too busy. Maybe he's not Bouchav, but just like he's thinking about other things. He's too busy with the.
Either he's busy with other things. I mean, this is like under the chuppah. Maybe it's like it's a Bouchav that, like, you know, how come you asked him and not me?
Exactly.
He's insulting me. He's, you know, you have to. It's always tricky, like, you know, who gets the kibudim. So therefore, he says that's why we delegate it to the rabbi, the Masada Kedushin Yichid Edim v'Naguli Yichid Et Hashatz v'Hashamish. Right, so he says that the minag in Europe was that the chazan, the cantor, and the shamis, the gaboy, you know, they, because why? Because they would always be under the chuppah. Bibnesh omdim samuch lechatan vekala. Why would they be standing next to the chatan and kala? And the shamish is there because the rabbi is there. And if the rabbi is there, somebody has to carry the wine and the cup and the, right? So in other words, these two guys as public religious officials, they were muhsak as kosher people. I mean, I guess even they had daughters that got married and they couldn't do it at their own weddings. But, you know, the point is that they were kind of like the permanent edim, right? The rabbi would go around, you know, like when you have these, so I only a couple times did the, you know, tzohar. Yeah, tzohar, yeah, it's a beautiful thing. It's a wonderful thing. You do these weddings and you make it nice, and but you still want it. But often there aren't you know kosher edim. So the tzohar rabbi goes and he has to schlep along to edim with him. You know, often he grabs guys from yeshiva or something like that. Right, so you show up with the edim at hand. So the rabbi would say, you know, I'm coming, but you know, in our town, the chazan and the shamis, they are the edim.
Once investigated as an edim, it was a Parsi wedding.
Uh-huh.
And the rabbi was related to each other, and the tzaddik position saw me and he said, "Come here."
Because everybody else was a karov, because they had big families. Yeah. And if the chazin is a relative and he's posel, yichid echad, right? So then they'd say shalom, shalom is here. We'll shalom parnas is here. We'll make him the aid. Okay, I guess we should stop here. I don't know, maybe we'll do one more week of this. You can either give me back the pages or hold on to them until next week, and then we'll get back to the Gemara. Okay. Nice to see you folks online.
Thank you so much.